you with your body, but what you think. There are mitzvahs about belief. So, for example, what are some of the mitzvahs about belief? What do you have to believe in?
God.
What about Hashem?
He's the only one.
Right. By the way, what's your name?
Jeremiah.
So I like to, you don't have to, just use a recommendation. I'm not going to swoop in here and tell you what to do. But I like to use the word Hashem more than God. Only because God is what the entire world talks about. It's important. I'm happy to talk about God. But Hashem is how I refer to him. The Ribono Shel makes it more personal. You can choose to or not to. I don't want to. But just think about the way. This is a parsha which you mentioned a Kodesh Baruch Hu's name a lot. And Eliezer is always mentioning the Kodesh Baruch Hu's name. So if you lose that, he's a name. It's not a nickname for Hashem. It's not a nickname. Everyone calls him God, but we have it. This is like Hashem has special nicknames for us. Anyone know the nicknames of the Jewish people? What are the nicknames Hashem has for us? Yeshurun, which is a nickname for Yisrael. What else? What did you say?
Sheor.
What's your name?
Yoni.
Okay, Yoni, you're not accepted to go. So just and like, that's the first thing that pops into your mind. We have to talk a little bit. It's all right, Yoni, you're great. You're cool. This is not an interview today. Okay? So, Kodesh Baruch Hu calls us Yeshurun, Ephraim, Habin, Yakirli, Ephraim, Amlechas Kohanim, Am Segula. Very good. Hashem has so many beautiful names for Amon Mikvar, back to the base of Mikdash. So, my nickname for Kodesh Baruch Hu is Hashem, Ribono Shel, Kodesh Baruch Hu. Any Yiddish speakers here? Well, you need to teach a little Yiddish. I teach you a cool Yiddish word. Go home and tell your father or your mother today at the Shabbos table that Rabbi Taragin called you how to say Hashem in Yiddish. It's called the Abishter. Okay? Anyone here before? Okay?
Yeah.
Everyone together. This video really impressed the pants off of you. You know what? Go over to the person in shul and say, where do you go to school? I go to Frisch. And they'll make a grin. Frisch, color. I said, okay, but my Rebbe tell me about the Abishter. Whoa, okay. It's a whole different way. It's a whole different way. Okay. Now we can start talking. Okay. Now I'm sending my kids to Frisch. I can learn about the Abishter. Okay, so you have to believe in the Abishter. You have to believe he's not physical. You have to believe he created the world. You have to believe that he supervises the world. Hashgacha, creation, nevuah, Moshe Rabbeinu, resurrection, Tchias HaMeisim, Mashiach. The whole list of things we have to believe in, those are harder mitzvahs, because how do you believe in something? But at least you can learn, you can study, you can acquire knowledge. And Avram, of course, discovered Hashem. But then there's this third part of religion, of Avodas Hashem, that's the hardest part. And it's not what you do with your body, because that's easy. It's not what you believe in your brain, because that's harder, but you can acquire that knowledge. But it's what you feel in your heart. And there are two mitzvahs that we're meant to feel towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu, towards the Abishter. And there are mitzvahs, and it's so hard to imagine how to become like that, how to legislate emotions. What are the two emotions we have to feel about Hashem?
Abba Yiro.
Abba Hashem and Yiro Hashem. How in the world can I be forced to love Hashem or to fear Hashem? And that's a double problem. Because number one, how can you tell anyone to love something they may not love? I love vanilla ice cream. I hate chocolate ice cream. You cannot tell me to love chocolate ice cream. I hate it. How can you change what I like? And here's the second issue. I imagine if you put a lot of chocolate ice cream in front of me, like sometimes at night when my wife is sleeping, if my wife doesn't really let me eat ice cream, I wait till she goes to bed and I look through the freezer and I'm foraging around for some snacks to get a little sweet tooth. Oh no, only chocolate ice cream. It's not hot an apple or something. But if after a while I'm looking through the freezer, there's nothing there, I go to the mud room, there's nothing there, I go to the pantry, okay, you know, it's not some chocolate ice cream. Nothing left, I'll just have the chocolate ice cream. And you know what? It's not the end of the world. Tastes all right. Not great, but all right. But at least it's ice cream. I can taste it. I can feel it. It has an impact on me. How could I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu when I can't imagine him? I can't describe him. I can't see him. I can't know him. It's not chocolate ice cream that you can make me love it. I can't acquire a taste. Here's a challenge. Can anyone say a word that applies to Hashem? But before I ask you that question, there's only one word in the entire spectrum of human language that applies to Kodesh Baruch Hu. See if you can find that one word. It's a three-letter word. No other. What is it?
One.
What?
One.
No. Because we don't really know what one is, because for our one is different than his one. I'll show you in a moment. There's only one word that applies to Kodesh Baruch Hu. What is it?
Rasa.
No, because he's not in the same way. You're all correct, but you're all, you'll see why. You're all giving good answers. N-O-T. He's not anything that we know. Any word that you could conjure comes from human experience and totally doesn't apply to him. They're all approximations, because when we feel compassion, what's your name?
Joshua.
When we feel compassion, we cry, we change. He doesn't cry, he doesn't change, he's not physical. So we associate his treatment of us with compassion, but it's an approximation. And Hashem's oneness is different from our oneness, because we think this chair is one, right? But I could break this down into metal and wood, and I could take the wood and break it down into molecules. I could take those molecules and break them down into atoms. I could take the atoms and deconstruct them into quarks. And we've proven in the past century how much energy will be released if I just smash these atoms. Well, nuclear fusion. So Hashem is indivisible in a way that I can't even imagine. And let me give you another example. Everyone close your eyes for a minute. I'm going to say a word and think of something to associate with that word. You ready? One, two, three. Infinity. Okay, so half of you are math geeks and you're thinking about the infinity sign. And you guys are definitely accepted to Gush because only math geeks come to Gush. Okay? Number two is, those of you who are Star Wars fans are thinking about the opening credits of Star Wars. Okay, you guys can also come. Neither of those are infinity. There are signs, there are symbols, there are large finitudes. You know what infinity is? I can't describe it to you because that's not the way Hashem made my mind. Hashem made my mind in a way that I can only think like this, finite. It can think large, but it's going to be limited. So I can't even begin to understand Hashem. Guys, that's why philosophy is so flawed. Because it is an attempt to describe Hashem in human terms, and it's always flawed. So some people think that it's helpful. Some people think that it's useless. But it's never going to be as direct as wanting Torah, because you're listening to Hashem's directly revealed statements. Philosophy is a guesswork, it's patchwork, it's speculative. I'll use words that may be able to describe it. Some people find it useful. I'm not in any way denigrating it, but it's not as, or to say it differently, Moshe Feinstein knew a lot more about Hashem than Albert Einstein. Because he read Hashem speaking to him. Albert Einstein tried to use physics and philosophy to grasp Hashem, and it's always going to be limited. So how do I love and fear Hashem when I may not want to, and I can't even understand him? And Avraham is the only person in Tanakh to be called an Ohev Hashem, and the only person in Tanakh to be called a Yirei Shamayim. Trick question. Ask your father, your uncle, your older brother, learn the yeshiva. Who is the only one in Tanakh to be called an Ohev Hashem? Avraham. Zera Avraham Ohavi. Who is the only one to be called a Yirei Shamayim? Ata Yadati Kirei Elokim Ata. Last week's parsha. So what is Avas Hashem? And what is Yiras Hashem? And how do you get there? How do you get there? The answer is, listen carefully, it's not an emotion. It's an attitude that may lead to an emotion, but it doesn't start as an emotion, which, by the way, is true of all emotions. Cheap emotions can be triggered by a momentary event, and then it comes and goes. Deep emotions that settle in and anchor to your identity because they're based on an attitude and an approach and a relationship, right? So let's say they just gave me a coffee from the den, a hot chocolate, I enjoyed it, but it comes and goes. It was a quick emotion. My wife, I love deeply. Why? Because we've been together for 32 years and we built a family. So it's based on some deep, long, entrenched, emotions have to be entrenched in other than emotional experiences, or else they just come and go. So Avas Hashem is an attitude and Yiras Shamayim is an attitude. What are those attitudes and how can you get there? This is real, guys. This is the upper class of Avodas Hashem. Not just mitzvot, and not just tefillah, and not just what you believe in. Do you want to be an Ohev Hashem? Do you want to be a Yirei Shamayim? And how do you get there? So let's start with Avas Hashem. Imagine a Sunday night. Well, let's say Matzei Shabbos. Let's make it even better. Matzei Shabbos, Hashem comes to you in a dream and says you have 24 hours off. 24 hours to do whatever you want. No punishment, no reward, no accountability. You can eat whatever you like. You can say whatever you want. You can touch whatever you want. You can go do free furlough. Anyone? The Amish, age 17, the kids go off on a rumspringa to sow their wild oats and see whether they want to buy in. What would you say? 24 hours off. You don't have to answer the question, but think about it. You know what I would say? and I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of the Rabbanim. And this is the sign, listen carefully, of religious maturity. I would tell Hashem, I'm not changing anything. Because I don't see this world of religion as suffocating and stifling and stealing my real interests, and I'd rather. I think the system that Hashem gave me is the best way to lead my life. Because it's full of values and dignity and duty and mission and vision and compassion and idealism and family and community. And I'm not doing this for you, Hashem. I'm doing this for me. I'm not doing this to hold my breath for 80 years so then I can get a punch my ticket to Olam Haba. You know what? If Hashem told me there's no Olam Haba, I wouldn't change anything. That's why the Torah doesn't mention Olam Haba once. Once. You think something so eternal and so important would be mentioned once in a while, right? The Torah doesn't want to sell out religion as a suppression and as a subordination of this world just to get to the next world. You know, things like that? A suicide bomber. I'm going to kill thousands of people so I get my 72 virgins. I'm going to commit a crime in this world, get to the next world. Hashem says, guys, if you don't want to listen, you can leave, okay? Cool, okay? Hashem says, this is the way to lead your life in this world. It's the best way to lead Olam Hazeh. I remember when I left Yeshiva after 2 years, I went to my Rebbe, Aaron Lichtenstein, and I wanted to say thank you to him. Try to be grateful, guys. One of the traits, I think, I was just in Boston yesterday, and one of the boys asked me, how can I prepare for Yeshiva in Israel? I told him, take one aspect of your religion and try to improve it before you come to Yeshiva, because everyone waits to Yeshiva and waits till seminary, and just try to change beforehand. So he said, give me an example. I said, you know, just try to be more grateful. It's Thanksgiving time. Everyone's talking about gratitude. Try to work on gratitude. Because when you have so much, and let's face it, guys, I want to be honest with you, straight talk. I can't imagine, I don't know everyone's family, I don't know where you come from, but most of you come from a demographic and are in this school where you probably have more in your lives than any high school kids that I meet. I meet a lot of high school kids all over the world. I meet kids in South Africa, I meet kids in Australia, I meet kids in Brazil. You guys have a lot. Religion, family, community, kosher, frish, rabbis. Well, it's a handicap sometimes. It's really hard to feel gratitude when you have so much. When you have less, you're very grateful. You're very thankful. Think about someone you know in your life that shows gratitude. Typically, it's because they have less than you do. And they're very appreciative. So the other kid asked me, well, Rabbi, how can I prove my gratitude? How do we do it? It's really simple. It's actually really fascinating. If you say thank you a lot, if you verbalize gratitude, it's one of the traits that you start to grow into if you say it a lot. Not every trait is like that. A lot of traits you need to work only internally. But gratitude is the type of trait which if you say it a lot, it starts to internalize. So just try to work on that a little bit. Try to think over Shabbos. Someone gives you some food, your mom makes a plate of food you like, a friend comes over, whatever. Just try to increase the amount of times you say thank you to people. You'll start to feel, you know what? I don't take things for granted. People suffer. In the yeshiva, we have a program for special needs boys and special needs boys. There's a program for girls in one of the other seminaries. It's called the Darkeinu. I try to tell the boys, just imagine they sit in the classroom next to us. You know the difference between sitting in my classroom and sitting in that classroom with Darkeinu kids, the special needs young men? The difference is 10 seconds of oxygen that your mother got when she delivered you. Because when you were delivered, the umbilical cord wasn't wrapped around your neck, and she was breathing, and you were breathing through the umbilical cord. And when those kids were born, for whatever reason, there was complications during birth. They became CPE or whatever else they had. Did you make that decision? You didn't make that decision. Is it a dramatic difference? No, it's 10 seconds. Who made the decision? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So just thank Hashem for what you have. Just be grateful. You're sitting, not that they're any less. They've got their room and their track, and you've got your track. So I'm not changing anything. I don't want to change any of this. I want to thank Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I said, Rebbe, you know how you have to thank your father for bringing you into this world, your father and your mother, and thank your Rebbe for bringing you into Olam Haba? I want to thank you because I think you brought me to Olam Hazeh also. Because the type of lifestyle you demonstrated to me made me so interested in being from. Because I saw in you and people that were learning You know what I saw? I mean, I was a high school kid. I was confused like you guys are. I was a train wreck in high school. I wasn't like getting focused on life. I saw people of class and dignity and passion and values and discipline and commitment and hard work and intelligence, kind parents, kind husband. I want to be like that. I want to have a better life for myself. I don't want to be confused. I don't want to be lost. I don't want to be a train wreck. And I realized that I've got to start learning, growing, and being more religious because it'll make me a better person. I never met a better person in my life than my Rebbe. Not because he was from, he was such a great person. If you sense that, now listen carefully. That's Ahavas Hashem. When you grow older, you'll see, you're very young now, so if I ask you what you love, it will tend to be things that have a physical impact on you. You love food because you enjoy the taste and the stomach feels better and your body feels better. You love a movie because when you watch the movie, your heart palpitates. You love a sports event because you like the drama, the suspense, rooting for. Namely, you love things that have a physical impact on you, physical, psychological, that affect your mood, affect your body. As you start to grow older and more mature, you start to love things not because they're physical, but because they make you better. So I love Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I never tasted him. I never tried to take a bite out of his arm. He didn't taste good. When I walked into the room, I didn't feel like I was watching a sporting event. My heart started racing. I love him because he made me better. I love my wife because she made me better. And we built a family together. And we built our lives together. So as you grow older, you start to love ideas and people that make you better as a person. Here's the catch. Guys, girls, listen. If you see religion the way I just described it to you, it's not about Hashem, you're doing it for yourself, then you'll love Hashem. Because you'll thank Him for giving you this way to live your life that will make your life so much better. That's how the Rambam describes Ahavas Hashem. It's in Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam says, if you see religion that way, you are an Ohev Hashem. Who was the first person to see religion that way? Why? Because until Avram came, as I told you before, everyone thought Hashem hated human beings. Everyone thought that Hashem was angry at human beings. Because what did they see? They saw, do we have to stop? Are we willing? Do we have to stop? Until Avram came along, you know what people thought about Hashem? He was always angry because all they saw was floods and population dispersals and people suffering and nomads and being expelled from Gan Eden. They thought Hashem was angry. And Avram was the first person to say Hashem isn't angry. Who remembers? How did Noach see Hashem? How did Hashem come to Noach? Guys, if you want to talk, I'm sure you're teaching will excuse you. It's great, okay? I won't be insulted. I think other people want to listen, so maybe I have sensitivity to other people. So when Hashem came to Noach, how did he come? As a rainbow. Why a rainbow? The Ramban says because people thought Hashem was always angry at them, was shooting arrows at them the whole time, because that was the weapon of the day. If Hashem is shooting arrows and there's a bow, then Hashem is shooting at you, right? Hashem is shooting at a bow at you. Then Hashem says, I'm not angry. I don't have a bow. I'm protecting you. I'm going to turn the bow into a rainbow. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to invert the bow into an iron dome. I'm going to protect you. I don't hate you. I love you. People just didn't get it. Avram came after 2,000 years and he told people, no, Hashem wants human welfare. Hashem wants human beings to have a good life. Hashem, if you worship Hashem, you have a better life. That's why Avram wasn't just a man of faith. He was a man of chesed. He couldn't just talk the talk. He had to walk the walk. He couldn't just describe Hashem that wanted human advance and prosperity. He had to actually be an agent of prosperity. He had to visit the ill and take care of guests. He had to show this is what Hashem wants. Guys, look around you in your world. Most of the world, the Western world that's bought into Judaism and Christianity, they live advanced lives, medical advance, technology, science, roads, toilets, comfort. And most of the world in the Far East that's still stuck in paganism, they lead backwards lives, and they lead lives without medical conditions, without infrastructure, because Avram's message was that Hashem wants you to enjoy your life. He wants you to have a prosperous life. Why do you think so many Jews are scientists? Why do you think so many Jews battle social justice? Why do you think so many Jews have spearheaded the advance of society? Because we believe Hashem wants us to improve the human condition. Hashem wants us to improve our lives. Any of your parents' father, any of your parents' doctors? Hashem wants your father to be a doctor. Any of your parents scientists? Hashem wants them. Any of your parents economists? Hashem wants us to change this world and to improve it. Avram was the first person to show everyone that the will of Hashem and human welfare, look at my hands, they're the same. And that a life of worshiping and believing in Hashem will make your life better. And because he was able to show that, he was called a Oyev Hashem. That's Avas Hashem. Avas Hashem is not the love that you feel for a good meal or Avas Hashem is, if you see religion, if you see Avas Hashem, as the, do you see it? Don't answer the question, obviously. But that's what we're here. We're here to help you improve your lives. I'm not here to sell you Kool-Aid. We're not here to try to indoctrinate you. This is the best way that you can, this is the life worth living. You will be the better version of yourself if you follow Hashem's rule book, because after all, how else will you know how to lead your life? Based on your own instincts, your own judgment? It's very confusing. Think about all the traits Hashem put into your body. How are you going to know how to juggle that? Ego, desire, jealousy, ambition, fear, guilt, aspiration. All of those traits have a purpose. You just have to know how to calibrate them. You don't have an ego, you'll never accomplish anything. You don't have jealousy, you won't have jealousy in an envious way. How do you juggle them? When? How? How do you express them? When do you express them? That's why Avram is called an Oyev Hashem. He was the first person to crack that riddle. The first person to sense Hashem's will, human will, they're synchronous. Hashem wants human beings to prosper. Hashem wants human welfare. He was the first person to be called an Oyev Hashem. Until the end of last week's parsha. At which point Hashem said, walk up the mountain, and you've proven to me that you know how to be an Oyev Hashem. You've proven to me that you know how to serve me when you understand me. Now's your final test. Listen carefully, because if you have this in life, you will be a successful Jew. If you don't have it, you will fall. I promise you, you will fall, because you need the second part. Can you serve me when you don't understand me? Can you serve me when I ask you to do something that you just can't make sense within human logic and human reason? Can you walk up the mountain and kill your sons? And there is no human conscience that can justify that act. You know why there's no human conscience that can justify that act? Because we have a moral instinct. And you know who gave us a moral instinct? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem said, I want you to suppress that moral instinct. And I want you to take an action which is monstrous. And I want you to sacrifice your son, make-believe, right? Avram didn't know it was make-believe. Hashem was all make-believe, but Avram didn't know that. Because I want to know, can you serve me when you can't understand me? And when Avram passed that test, he passed the final test. And what does Hashem say? Last week's parsha, Ata Yadati. Now I know. Until now I didn't know you had Yor Shemayim, because until now everything made sense to you. You were living a life of Avas Hashem. You were bringing peace to the world, you were ending wars, you were delivering wealth, you were healing people, you were visiting people. Everything you did that I wanted you to do made sense to you. You did it because it made sense, and Hashem wondered, why not? They're all synchronized. Now Hashem says, can you take an action that you just don't understand? Please listen carefully. I don't know if you've ever heard this. Yirah Shemayim is not this. Look at me. Yirah Shemayim is not my knees shaking. It's not Yirah Shemayim. Yirah Shemayim means, I know Hashem is different and beyond, and I can't understand him. Step one. Step two, I submit to that higher authority without questions when I have to. It's a two-step process. The recognition of the distance and the difference, and the willingness to submit to Hashem's authority. And Avram passes that final test. And girls, guys, that's the baseline of Avodas Hashem, because I'm sure you'll have a great life, and I hope you have a great life. And everything will make sense, but there will be dark clouds. There will be times in your life when it doesn't make sense. Imagine yourself, close your eyes and imagine yourself, right? a little bit of historical reality. You were all born, what, you're about 15, you're about 16, 17 now, about 17 years old, so you're all born about 2005. Imagine you're born in 1925. It's only an 80-year difference. If you were born in 25, instead of being in Frisch, going to the den, having a good time this Shabbos, you'd be hiding in sewers from Hitler at the age of 17, running away and spending your Shabbos in excrement just so you shouldn't be killed in some sewer to hide from Hitler. There are no free lunches in this world. Hashem didn't put you into 2022 as opposed to 1925 just to have another cup of coffee. Coffee's great. Have your coffee. At some point, privilege carries duty. At some point, comfort carries expectation. Why did Hashem put you into this world? Why did he send you to Frisch? And what does he want you to do with that? That's a loaded question. Don't answer the question tonight. Don't sign from the dotted line, but start to dream. Start to say, I have to do something with this life that warrants what I've received. Very often, guys come over to me at the end of yeshiva, and they want to thank me. So at the time, very, very bad at accepting thank yous. It's just, it's hard for me. I'm not good at it, and it's a flaw, because I know that it's not my right to prevent someone from saying thank you, because it's their need to say thank you. So I sit there, like, holding my breath. I really, really don't like it. It's really very awkward for me. And I say, Rebbe, what can I do? What can I do? I say, you know what I'd like you to do? I'd like you to watch the final scene of Saving Private Ryan. Anyone remember the final scene of Saving Private Ryan? Not the final scene with the old guy in the cemetery, but the scene before. You watch it. It's Bucky. It's Bucky. Remember Saving Private Ryan? It's a World War II movie, very gory, about this regiment that dispatched to find a soldier whose brother had already died in the war. And the rules were in America that if one child dies, they have to bring the other child home so the parents don't suffer two casualties. So this whole regiment was looking for a brother of a soldier that had died, and they go through basically hell to find him, and half the regiment gets killed, and they get their limbs, and Tom Hanks is the head of the battalion. And at the end, the last final war scene, the last final battle, he gets shot and he's dying. And they finally find this little Private Ryan, who didn't know everyone's efforts to try to find him. And he's sitting there, he's just looking at this group of soldiers that had died, that had cut their limbs off, that just, and all the suffering they entailed. And he looks at this dying Tom Hanks, and he just says, like, I don't know what to make of this. Like, everyone died on my behalf and suffered. Like, what should I do? Like, at a certain point, if you have moral conscience, have a conscience in this life. You have a conscience. When's the last time you listened to your conscience? It's so crucial, like your compass in life. What's right? What's wrong? What's appropriate? There's a conscience in it. You say, what should I do? And Tom Hanks looks at him with his dying last two words as he's coughing up blood. And he says two words under his breath. And he says, earn it. Just earn it. Only all these people died for you, live the type of life that justifies all the sacrifice. Because if you don't live that type of life, then everyone would die for nothing. So flip it around. No one died for you. You're put into this world with everything. So now earn it. Make it count. Do something great with you. I don't know what that great thing is. Some of you is moving to Israel. Some of you is really learning well. Some of you is just raising your family the right way. No one answer this question. I don't want anyone to raise their hand. I'm saying this because I want to make it real for you. Because I'm sure if there are 40 people in this room, and please, this is not meant to be invasive, it's meant just to be instructive. Because changing the world doesn't just mean becoming a rabbi or moving to Israel. Changing the world sometimes is doing quiet things. If you come from a home, and I don't know any of you, so please, I really don't know any of your names. I look forward to meeting some of you down the line. But if you come from a home in which your parents don't have the best marriage, you know what you can do in this world? Change it. Flip the script. Don't be a great leader. Don't go out there and change the world. Just make sure you're the best husband ever. Because you know what? That's also creating a masara. Because if you have a good marriage, your kids will have a great marriage because they'll use you as a role model. And then your grandkids will have it. Trust me, I have grandkids. I know these things go down in as a masara. So I didn't mean to make anyone feel uncomfortable. I hope every single one of your parents have great marriages. But if they don't, you know you can make a big change in this world? Just determine you're going to love your wife or your husband, and you're going to make this great, great home of love and bliss. And That's also a big change. That's also a big difference. So I don't know where you're headed in life, but you're all going to come to a moment that doesn't make sense to you. Walking out of Auschwitz in 1945, the world doesn't make sense. It's not like saying, oh, I love Hashem because how great you've been to me and how great this world is. 6 million people were burnt. 6 million people were cremated. I can't understand Hashem. You know what? You just keep marching on. Because you'll never understand Hashem. I moved to Israel in 1990, 3 years in 1993. 3 years after I moved, there was blood running in the streets of Yerushalayim. This is what I came for. I came from Medinas Yisrael. I came from Mashiach. I came from Rishis Michas Gun Lasenu. And I had to live through two intifadas. And my goldfisher, you know, talking about the serious nefesh, he had to come to Gush. He didn't leave Al Lunch for an entire year. His parents were so frightened about him coming, and he so desperately wanted to come along, he stayed in Al Lunch for, he didn't leave an entire year. Tough times. Tough times make good people, strong people. It's a little bit scary in life. Tough times make strong people. Strong people make good times. Good times make good people. Don't be weak. We're at the edge of this cycle of good times, and we're weak. We've got to be a little tougher, a little stronger. That's Yirat Shamayim. Are there things in religion I don't understand? Of course. I don't understand Basar B'Chalav. I don't understand a lot of things. Are there things in religion that just I don't understand, but also grate me the wrong way? I don't know how Kodesh Baruch Hu said it. It contradicts certain things I feel? Yeah. Will I have the answers? Maybe. Will I die with questions? Absolutely. You're not going to find all the answers. Nice to meet you. No problem. Some things are beyond you. Guys, girls, that's how you grow in Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. It's always like, imagine an engine with two pistons. That's what keeps the engine of religion moving. Most of the time in this world, you understand Hashem. As you grow older, you'll understand more of Hashem. I remember I was a little bit younger than you. I was 11th grader. I was at a Friday night Oneg. And a girl came over to me and started crying. Because she was having a hard time. And my instincts told me, put your arms around her. She's crying. She's a human being crying. How can you just sit there? And I said, I can't. I just didn't get it. Why is Hashem telling me something that makes no sense? The most obvious and logical thing is just to help her out and put my arms around her. And I grew a little older. And I realized what sexuality is. And I realized what marriage is. And I know how deep it is as part of my identity. And I would never want to share that language with a person that I don't really have a life that I'm building with them. And it's a language that I only share with one person. I don't know what I would feel if it was just something that I had spread. So when you're 15 and 16, things don't make sense. And you get older, then when you're 40, more things make sense. And when you're 70, things start to make sense. I hope things are starting to make sense to you. But when you get to Israel, everyone's a senior here. But when you all get to Israel, things will start to make more sense to you. What's this? Why are people so committed to Talmud Torah? I don't understand this Gemara thing. Gemara seems so picky and so idiosyncratic. Why are people spending their whole? Why is everybody Garm Schwartz? They're not Garm Schwartz. Every Garm Schwartz is his mind is probably five times my mind. Why is this man spending his Friday morning teaching a bunch of 12th grade dimwits like you? When he could be out there making millions in some corporation. Why is he spending his time teaching you about a man who goes into a tunnel and steals and Baba Machteras? What happened to this guy? The guy went off the edge. He's been smoking drugs just like this guy. What's he doing with his time? No. He knows that his most direct way to understand Hashem is to understand Hashem's will about ownership and about penalty and about Beis Din. And the best way to understand that is to see these cases that our Chazal spun as riddles, don't see the logic. And there's nothing more important to him than giving you that. There's nothing more important to me. Nothing more important to me than giving you that. So just wait a little. But try to think about how you can walk in Abraham's footsteps. How can you start? Not everything, but how can you start to see religion a little differently? Trust. If I can have a magic wand and give you one trait that's missing in your culture, that you absolutely need to be religious and to be successful, not just religious. It's trust, and the reason you don't have it is because you live in a culture of distrust as was everything that you think in our culture is discovered to be incorrect. And celebrities turn out to be molesters, and athletes turn out to be abusers, and politicians turn out to be corrupt. So your mind is trained to look at people and believe there's something behind that person that I'm not seeing, and I better guard myself against that person's message. Until you break that cycle of distrust, you will be stuck in the mud. The only way you get forward in life is when you find people and you can trust them. And thank God in this school, I think you have more people that you can trust because you really know them well. Trust gets you across the bridge of doubt. You hear what I said? Every time you move forward, you have to cross a bridge of doubt. And the only way you can cross the bridge is by taking someone's hand who you trust and say, walk me across. Take me to the other side. If not, you'll always stay on the wrong side of the bridge. You'll never get forward. So learn to trust people. This is a life that's worth living. This will make you happy. You'll look in the mirror, you'll see a person that's full of confidence and optimism and love and care and goodness. And if not, one day you'll wake up and you'll look in the mirror and you'll see a ghost. Because all the money and all the achievements and all the padding, egos and diplomas, one day you wake up and there's nothing there. It's all a lot of smoke. Invest in relationships, not accomplishments. Invest in value, not in momentary pleasure. Invest in things that last, not things that come and go. I'll just end and I'll give you one phrase if you want to take away with it. One phrase. You have to make decisions in life between meaning and happiness. Happiness is what I described before. You eat something, you're happy. You see a movie, you're happy. The Giants win, you're happy. 5 hours later, it's coming and going. 2 days later, the happiness is gone. Meaning lasts. When's the last time you read something that gave you meaning 3 days later? When's the last time you did a chesed that gave you meaning 3 days later? When's the last time you davened that gave you meaning? Meaning is hard, it's not fun. Happiness is fun. You have to choose between happiness and meaning. I promise you, if you choose happiness, you have neither. I promise you, if you have meaning, you have both. It just takes a while to appreciate. Okay, guys? Shabbat shalom, everyone. Have a great Shabbat. Don't forget, Abbas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. What's your name?
John Paul.
And the college?
Paul.
Nice to meet you, John. Where are you from?
Oregon.
Is anyone around for Shabbos? Okay, so I'm giving a shiur tonight at 8:15 in the chapter for high school seniors.
Oh, you're in the comedian?
What?
You're in the comedian, don't
I? No, there's a Oneg. It's a good Shabbaton. Guys, any seniors, there's a good Shabbaton for alumni. I'm giving a shiur for high school kids at 8:15. And then there's a tish with the alumni afterwards. If you're considering this, it's really a great way to meet alumni. A lot of the boys who came to yeshiva this year thought that was very, very helpful. Not so much to hear me, but hear me all the time, but to meet kids and to talk. That's the best way. It's at 8:15 in Gromer, and then there's a shiur at the shiur is at 8:15. Guys, again, it's going to be a fresh year tonight because TABC is up the mountains and MTA. So we'll continue this year. And girls are welcome to come also tonight. 8:15 in Roma, but not for the teachers, just the teacher boys. What's your name?
Aaron Levinson.
Aaron Levinson. Nice to meet you. Aaron, what's your name?
Robin Kirsch.
Robin Kirsch. Nice to meet you. What's your name?
Huh?
Aaron Levinson. Nice to meet you. Okay, wherever comes, a lot of good food tonight. Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Now I was going over it. I'm like, wait, how can we have...